Oh, that was very nice. Music can be very influential. We don't realize that sometimes, but it really has and can make an impact on our life. Nice music. Silk and water. Most of us are aware of the word mentor. But what does mentor mean for us? This afternoon, I want to talk about the subject of mentoring, helping someone else to become a servant. This may turn you off or plug your ears, but I want to mention something about Greek mythology first, and then we'll get into that. In Greek mythology, mentor was the proper name of an elderly friend and counselor of the hero Odysseus. When Odysseus set out for Troy, he entrusted everything that he had, his house, the education of his son Telemachus, to mentor. That's how much he trusted that individual. Telemachus was the constant companion of his mother during the long years of wandering of his father, Odysseus. I don't know where he went, but he didn't come home for years and years and years after the fall of Troy. So the family was upset and wondering where he was. Telemachus watched unhappily also his mother, as many of the ill-mannered suitors of the hand, for their hand to the mother, they lived riotless on his father's estate. He was unable to bear the taunts of these men any longer, so he set out to Pylos, another part of the Grecian area, to learn from King Nestor. I know you're really enjoying these words. But to learn from King Nestor the fate of his father. Nestor didn't know, so he sent him to the king of Sparta, who told him that his father had been held prisoner. So, uncertain as to whether his father was alive or dead, Telemachus went home, only to discover that during his absence, his father, Odysseus, had returned home, and he was disguised now as a beggar. Telemachus then helped his father kill the suitors. Some entering. To tell the suitors that what was rightfully his. And according to legend, Telemachus married the sorceress Circe, or her daughter, Cassandra. So, in this case, even though the mentee, the one that profited from it, may not have turned out to be too good in the long run, the mentor was trustworthy and reliable. Long story to say, that's the reason why mentor's name has come to mean the wise or the mentoring is very important for us today. Mentoring is what we can do in order to pass the baton and help someone else who may not know what we know, help someone else to become a servant of God in God's church. A mentor is a person who takes a personal interest in and helps an inexperienced person. We may not realize sometimes how, pardon the word, we don't realize how to hear. They don't know, and they need someone to help them. And so the one who is interested and wants to help an inexperienced person is what you might say a mentor. And he is mentoring one called a mentee. The mentor serves as a role model. And it's very, very important. Offering knowledge, insight, to this mentee. They need this. They might never get it. But because a person has a personal interest in that person and doesn't want to see the person that person to make the goal of life in the right way. The special help in they don't really understand life because no one ever told them and they couldn't think of it on their own. But a mentor helps them an awful lot. But the question for us today is, how can we do the next generation of mentees, shall we say, in the Church of God? We of a certain age don't like to hear it, but we're told often that we're getting older and we need to step aside so that the next generation can come along and make a success of life in God's church. So how can we recognize and help to develop the next generation of people coming along in the church or near the church so that they can be a successful Christian? That's not to say that God doesn't do anything, but God does work through human beings quite often in events in His church. What I want to say next, though, is a major point, and it may sound negative, maybe very negative, but it isn't. It's quite positive. And that is, we need to discern who should be mentored and what they should be mentored for. Some people may think that you can take anybody and teach them how to do anything. Do you believe that? You can take anybody and teach them how to do anything. Well, that's not always true. Not all people can lead songs. They don't know how. Not all people can give sermonettes. They don't understand. Not all people can organize activities. They're lost when they try to do that. Not all people can teach young people. Some people are just not good at teaching young people. Other people are experts in teaching young people. Not all people can organize activities. They just don't have the know-how. Not all people can or even should give opening and closing prayers. They haven't come along well enough to do that, speaking on behalf of the church to God, when they don't know how to do it for themselves in life either. You've heard me talk about Jim Rohn a few times. He was a multimillionaire. He was a farm boy in Idaho in his youth. He made a mess of his life for a while. And someone told him about personal development. And he got hooked on it. And he became a famous man. He became, shall we say, a good man because someone else had the ability to teach him how to do things. And he was willing to listen because it was for his profit. He's now dead. But he helped many, many, many people with how to have a good life. Now, he didn't teach them how to gain eternal life, but he taught them how to have a good life. And they did. If they listened to what he said, then they had a better life than they ever had before. But in doing that, he borrowed very heavily and unashamedly from the Bible. He didn't give God any credit. We have the Bible. We can do the same thing to ourselves. We can do the same thing for others who are attending the Church of God if we do it properly. But there was one thing that he said that you may not agree with. Some people don't. It doesn't say anything about God and does not take away from the fact that God must invite and call. In speaking of many people and making many people into good workers, especially salespeople, finally, Rohn said, because he was a salesman and he made a lot of money as sales, but he had a lot of good ideas about living life, and especially the one about living a good life. Rohn said, after a few years of experience, and he learned this the hard way from experience, he said, you don't make good salesmen. You find them. Now, you may agree with that, you may not agree with that, but that's what he said after many years of experience. Jesus didn't build from scratch the apostles. They actually came to him first because they were looking for the Messiah. they didn't know who the Messiah was. John the Baptist said, "Ah." And they followed Jesus. They followed Jesus and they went to him first. Of course, we know that God was working with them all, but they did come to Jesus Christ. He didn't chase them down and say, "You're going to believe this whether you want it or not." They came to him. They wanted something, but they didn't know exactly what they needed. So Jesus didn't build from scratch the apostles. They came to him, or shall we say, he found them. They agreed to follow him, and you know the story after that. For many years, Jesus mentored these men on what they were to do, how to do it, and then he left, and they were on their own, and they had to then follow what he taught them about life. But they wouldn't have done as well had he not mentored them. We find this illustrated in Luke 6, beginning in verse 12. So let's turn to that particular page for the beginning. Luke chapter 6, and we'll begin in verse 12. Luke 6 and verse 12. Jesus was praying. He prayed all night. And it was a particular and specific prayer that he was involved in. In verse 12 it says, "It came to pass in those days that Jesus went out to the mountain to pray." He didn't stand up among the people and pray to look like he was a good man. He went out privately so that nobody could see him, and he would talk then to God the Father. And he continued all night in prayer to God, because he and he alone had to make a choice. Who would be the 12? There were more than 12, but he had to make that choice. So when it was day, he called his disciples to himself. And from them he chose 12, whom he also named apostles. So there were more than 12, but there were 12 that he wanted to select. And it took him a long, long time to do that. He didn't go chasing after them, but he asked God to show him which ones he should have. And he did that. And then, of course, it gives the particular names. He chose 12 from the many that were there, and he chose certain ones, and not all of them, because not all had the qualities that he wanted. And the 12 were already prepared somewhat because they had been looking for the Messiah, but they didn't know who he was and they didn't know what to do. So he didn't totally make them into what he saw when he met them. They accepted the challenge. And he then mentored them for several years. Jesus was a wonderful mentor. He didn't tell them everything always, but he did tell them the truth that they needed to know. And he encouraged them in certain things. Now there's another one over in Acts chapter 11 where the matter of mentoring is. And it's a very important one. And it shows that not all people can do the same thing. Paul was chosen and prepared to be an apostle by God himself. We know that story. But when the time came for Paul to become a part of God's work, he was in obscurity. Paul wasn't around. He had gone from where he was back to where he had been, and nobody seemingly knew where he was. And he was kind of a non-existent as far as the church of God. He was baptized. He had God's Spirit. I assume he was doing some of God's work, but it doesn't say what. He was a man of obscurity now, because when he first started, he banged over the head every man he could who was he had known before, tried to make that man believe that Jesus was the Messiah. And he tore up the town. And finally, the members of the church where Paul was said, "Paul, go home. You're causing more trouble than you're worth." And we don't think about Paul like that, but that was the case. He was causing more trouble than he was worth. So he went back to where he'd come from, and you didn't hear anything about him. Well, you will find in chapter 11 of Acts, verse 20, the beginning of this story about Paul and another man named Barnabas and this mentoring process. Acts chapter 11, and we'll start in verse 20. We may have to go to one or two other verses there, but it's basically chapter 11 and verse 20. Well, let's read verse 19 because it leads up to the story. Those who were scattered after the persecution that arose over Stephen, because Stephen had, in a sense, shut off his mouth and he got killed because of it, they all traveled as far as Phoenicia, Cyprus, Antioch, preaching the word to no one but the Jews only. Then verse 20, but some of them were men from Cyprus and Cyrene, that is from the Hellenist area, who when they had come to Antioch spoke to the Hellenists preaching the Lord Jesus. The ones who had been where Stephen was, they went to Antioch and they spoke only to the Hellenists, the non-Israelites, preaching the Lord Jesus. And the hand of the Lord was with them, and a great number of them believed and turned to God. So some who weren't Jews turned to God, and it began to be a lot of people. It said, a great number. The news of these things came to the ears of the church in Jerusalem, and they sent out Barnabas to go as far as Antioch. Now, Barnabas was a gentle individual. He was a great man. He was a good man. He was a very converted man. But when he came and had sent the grace of God, he was glad and encouraged them all with purpose that they should continue. Son talks about he was a good man. Now, it simply says in verse 25, doesn't say why, but he said, when Barnabas saw what was going on, Barnabas departed for Tarsus to look for Paul. Why would he do that? Barnabas could do this, couldn't he? Apparently he couldn't, because the situation involved people, the Hellenists, it involved people who weren't Israelites. And so what do you do? Well, now you know why God called Saul Paul, because he had the ability to speak in several languages. He knew how to deal with these people, and God used him to be the apostle to the Gentiles. And so it says, when Barnabas saw what was going on, Barnabas realized, I can't do this. I'm not qualified for this, but I know exactly who we need. I know exactly who we need. And he went to Tarsus to get Saul and found him and brought him home. And he and Saul worked together. When he found him, he brought him to Antioch. And so it was that for a whole year they assembled with the church and taught a great many people. And they were called Christians at that particular time. A couple of points I wanted to make here. Barnabas knew just the man for the job in Antioch. He had known Paul before. Paul was then actually mentored by Barnabas, even though Barnabas was the first to understand. And later on, Paul was the leader. So it shows that mentoring, that is, learning from the other, can be very, very important. And God knew who could do what, and he made it possible for that to happen. You will also find that after this happened, Paul did the same thing with Timothy. Timothy was a young man. He was not a powerful man. He was not a man who pounded on everybody. He was a young man, as we mentioned before. I don't know if he was a teenager, but he wasn't much above it. He was just a mild-mannered young man who grew up with his grandmother and his mother, but he was very converted. And Paul helped that young man, Timothy. He didn't make Timothy, but he found Timothy. You'll find this in Acts 16, the first three verses. Paul didn't even know who Timothy was. Acts 16, first three verses. And let's see. Well, verses 36 and 37 shows the story of Barnabas and Paul fussing over Barnabas's relative, John Mark. John Mark left the work with Paul and Barnabas, and Paul didn't like that, and he said, "We're not going to use this man anymore." Well, Barnabas said, "I think we should." So they got so heatedly, such heat in discussion, that finally Paul and Barnabas split. Now, they didn't leave the church. They didn't get angry or bitter. They just said, "We can't work together on this." And they actually didn't realize God might have been involved in this too. But Paul insisted that he should not take them with him anymore because he departed from the work. And it became such a sharp contention that they soon split. Now, let's see. Paul chose Silas. Then in chapter 16, you'll find it here. Paul and Silas were in Derbe and Lystra. And then there was a certain disciple there named Timothy. Well, Paul didn't know him. And he didn't know, in a sense, you might say, he didn't know God was leading him to this place to be a teacher of this young man who would later be a very powerful implement in the church of God. A certain disciple named Timothy, at that time he was just a disciple, he wasn't involved in the work, the son of a certain Jewish woman who believed, but his father was Greek. So he was the son of an ethnic different in the family. His father was a Greek, his mother was a Jew, so she married outside her ethnicity, and she married perhaps, I guess, outside of her religion too. But the son that they brought forth, who had Greek influence and Jewish influence, was still a very strong, powerful young man, willing to listen, willing to learn, but he needed a mentor. His father was not that. Sometimes, and it's sad that it's true of us men, sometimes we as a father are not the mentor that we should be, even of our own children. And it takes someone else to mentor our children so that they can be better off than they were under our hand. I know I've made certain mistakes in trying to mentor our children. Some worked, some didn't work so well. So Paul was brought to, and he found Timothy. He was well spoken of by the mother, by the brethren that were at Lystra and Iconium. Well, Paul wanted to have him go with him, and so he took him and circumcised him because they were going to be working with unconverted people, that is, non-Israelite individuals, and they didn't want that to be a something that would turn everybody off. So the point making here, Paul found Timothy, because, and then the church recommended Timothy. Sometimes we as ministers wonder, well, what did we do? So many other people helped. So many other people did things. God led them here. And I was just standing there and said, yes. So, but even so, it is God's church. It's His way. And we give Him the thanks and the praise, as we say, for His intervening and finding, bringing along the ones that He wanted. He didn't find Timothy. I'm sorry, he didn't make Timothy. He found him. And Timothy became a good minister in the church of God. And because of his being influenced by Paul or Saul, and because of his, at that particular time, where he came from, who his mother was and his father, and all that he had learned and willingly accepted, he was able to be an influence and mentor many other people later. And you'll find several places in the Bible where you wouldn't realize it, but what he's saying is he's showing you how to deal with other people and mentor the young men and the young women. So I said, sometimes it seems like it's all negative, the way that it's put together, but it isn't. It's working out of God's plan. I want to make a particular point here that also may sound negative, and I don't know what you think about it, but let me say it, and you just think about it. It's a lot harder to get someone out of a position when they're not doing a good job than it is to wait and fill it with the right person. Once you have put a person in a position and he's not qualified for it and he's not doing a good job, what do? Well, you can kick him out, or sometimes you may try that, and that creates a lot of problem too. Why is it that it's harder to remove a person from a position when not doing it well than it is if we had just waited and filled the right person? Why? Well, not all people want to learn or be mentored, and that's why sometimes you can't deal with them. Sometimes they just want to be in the position. So those who are good mentors need to learn to discern the mindset of individuals, their attitude, and the willingness or lack of willingness to be a servant. Do they want to serve the people of God's church, or do they just want to be up front and have a position? That has been in the church of God, and we've seen that over the years. Paul encouraged Timothy to be careful along this line, and he actually was telling Timothy how to mentor and how to teach others to be mentors. Let's go to 1 Timothy 5 and verse 24. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 24. Paul was at this time talking as an older individual of much experience to a young man who he had some experience by this time, but may not have had enough experience to know what to do. And so Paul was informing him or teaching him or mentoring him via the pencil and the paper. 1 Timothy 5, we'll start in verse 24, it says, how do you know when a person wants to be mentored? Well, you don't always. He said, Timothy, you need to realize some people's sins are clearly evident. I mean, you can spot them a mile away. You know what they're like. Some people's sins are clearly evident, preceding them to judgment. But those of some other men follow later. In other words, you don't really know, but if you just keep at it, you'll find out whether they are listening to what God says, and you can help them. Then he said, likewise, the good works of some are clearly evident. They're not trying to preach to anybody. They're just doing the right thing, and it's evident in their lives that they're doing the right thing and they want to do the right thing. The good works of some are clearly evident, and those that are otherwise cannot be hidden. You know what they are. Then let's go to 1 Timothy 1, verse 7. There's something else that he taught Timothy. And this also sounds like negativity, but it isn't. 1 Timothy 1, verse 7. He is talking to Timothy about why he left him in Macedonia. When I went to Macedonia, this is why I left you in Ephesus. And it goes back to the song that we were singing, they were singing about good, or was in the sermon about good doctrine. So he said, I want you to be able to charge some that they teach no other doctrine. So you have to be in control. Don't give heed to fables and endless genealogies. The purpose of the commandment is to love from a pure heart, a good conscience, and from sincere faith. So he was giving Timothy the ability to see into the person, into the situation, and give him ideas as to what would make everything work properly. Then after he said that, the purpose of the commandment is love from a pure heart, from a good conscience, and from sincere faith, from which, in verse 6, from which some, having strayed, turned aside to idle talk. So you will find that there are those who are in the organization, but there seems to be something missing somewhere. Some have strayed, they've turned aside to idle talk. Why would they do that? And what was their problem? And Paul informed him, you need to be able to see this. Not he was condemning anybody, just saying this is what you'll find out. Desiring to be teachers of the law, yet understanding neither what they say nor things which they affirm. In the church? Well, it was then, so could it possibly be these days too? Could there be those who just, they got a good spiel, but and they want to be teachers, but they don't really understand how to be a good teacher? Paul then said to Timothy, you know, we know that the law is good if one uses it properly. So Paul was mentoring Timothy, helping him to be a better minister. Timothy didn't have this understanding. He wanted to be a good minister, but he didn't have the experience that Paul did. Next, I'd like to talk a little bit about those who do want to learn and serve, and some of the principles that will apply to helping mentor them. If you or I or others, if you see a person that you think that you might be able to help, be careful just in running up and saying, I'm going to mentor you, like it or not. That may not work. The first way, or the first point in mentoring is be a friend. Jesus said, I'm your friend, to the apostles. He liked them. They were friends. They went to sleep when he was talking to God about he's going to have to give his life. He didn't give up on them because they were his friends. So be a friend, not a competitor. We live in a world where the word compete is overflowing on many things. You think Alabama and OSU are going to go there to love each other? They're going to compete, and it'll be vicious. Is that the way we operate? Be a friend, not a competitor or a dictator. If God has called them, they are family. Let's look at this in John 15, verse 15, about be a friend, not a competitor or a dictator. The book of John, chapter 15, and verse 15. May have to go to one or two other verses there, not sure. But John 15, verse 15, actually verse 14. Yeah, actually, verse 13, you're the one we hear often. Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. So you really like the person, and you'd do anything to make sure they make it if they're willing to listen to the right principles. And then he said to the apostles-to-be, the disciples, you are my friends if you do whatever I ask you. We need to understand that too. No longer do I call you servants or slaves. In other words, under my thumb. A servant does not know what his master is doing, but I've called you friends, for all things that I've heard from my Father, I've let you know. So being a friend, a genuine friend, not a competitor, and not a dictator. As I said, if God has called them, invited them, then ultimately we are family. And Jesus wanted them to understand that. Yet there was another point, and this is a hard one to follow, a hard one to be successful in your life. In John 13 and verse 13, another aspect of this, you're my friends. John 13 and verse 13 said, Jesus talking to the people who were upset over, or who he had washed their feet, Passover season. And Jesus said this to them, "You call me teacher, and you call me Lord, or Almighty God," whatever that he was called, they called him Lord and teacher, "and you say well, for so I am." Jesus didn't back off as to the authority that he had. He just didn't abuse anybody with it. He didn't hurt them with it. He said, "We're friends. I'm your teacher, and you're saying right when you say I'm a teacher." Then he said, "If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you ought to do the same for other people." So Jesus didn't treat them as slaves. He didn't lord it over them. He didn't gloat over them because he had taught them things they didn't know. He was a friend to them. He ate with them. He slept in their presence. He prepared food for them. And he did correct them. But he didn't destroy them. They left him in times, yet he loved them to the very end. So being a friend, not a competitor or a dictator, in being a mentor. If they find out that you don't really care for them, you're just doing it for your appearance, they probably never will come back again. That would bring you to the next point in being a mentor, a good mentor, and that is to lead by example. By example. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1. Paul was talking to people, and he didn't say, "Follow me or else." No, he didn't say that. But 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1 says it this way. "Follow me, or you're going to get it." No, he said, "Imitate me just as I imitate Christ." That's a big order. It's also honorable of Paul that he didn't say, "I'm the big dog. I'm the big man. What I say is God's law. What I say, you will do." He said, "Follow me as you see that I am following Christ." If you see that I'm not following Christ, he didn't say, but I know he meant, you don't have to follow me if I'm not following Christ. I might get you into trouble. Let's look then in Acts 20, verse 32, for another point that goes with this leading by example. Acts chapter 20. And Paul, you could say in this particular case that Paul was bragging, but he wasn't. He was just telling them the truth. Acts 20 and verse 32. Well, in verse 31, he was talking about how he had taught them. He said, "Therefore, watch and remember that for 3 years I didn't cease to warn you every night and day with tears." Then verse 32, "So now, brethren," so if he was shedding tears over the people that he was trying to help, they could see that he really was sincere. "So now, brethren, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and give you an inheritance among all those that are set apart." And notice this then. "I have coveted no one's silver or gold or clothing." I have coveted no one's silver or gold. You know, I really like you. I realize you got more money than I've got, so, you know, how about giving a little something? He didn't ask for them to take care of him. He asked them to imitate as he imitated God. Then he said in verse 34, "Yeah, you know for sure that these hands have provided for my necessities and for those who were with me. I've shown you in every way by laboring like this that you must support the weak." So he led by example. if they didn't tithe, and he was to live on the tithes of the members, then he didn't force them. And he didn't put them out of the church if they didn't. He let them realize what they were doing. Be an example of work, teaching, and serving. And you'll find also in 1 Timothy 4 a little bit more about this. Paul was, you might say, open about his life. Maybe not everything, and probably didn't need to be about everything, but he was an open man in many ways also. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12, he said, and this was specifically to Timothy, "Do not let anyone despise your youth." Many would wish we had our youth back. "Don't let anyone despise your youth, but be an example to the believers." And then he lists certain ways in which Timothy should be an example. And as an example, he would be able to mentor the other young people coming along. "Be an example to those who believe in word," that is, you might say, doctrine, "in conduct." What kind of an individual is the young boy or girl? "In love." What type of mindset does he have as far as dealing with other people? Is he taking advantage sexually because he could? "In spirit," he said, "in faith, and in purity." Well, that's a pretty big load for you, Timothy, to work for. Then he said, "Till I come, give attention to reading, exhortation, and to doctrine." So he was showing that if he really wanted to help others, then he needed to set the example, lead by example, and don't try to take it from them. And then the next point that is good on a mentor, because sometimes you will be so frustrated, you just want to give up and say, "Forget it." Forget it. And that is, be patient while they grow. Be patient while they grow and become proficient. How long did it take you and me? Well, we don't want to talk about that. It may have taken a long, long time. And it looked like maybe we never were going to get it. But God didn't give up. And so we shouldn't give up. We can be frustrated. And if they never ever do listen or want to be mentored, well, then that's their problem. But we need to still be patient. That's one of the privileges, or that's one of the principles of God's Holy Spirit. Long-suffering. Let's notice this in Matthew 26 and beginning in verse 39 about being patient while they learned. Matthew chapter 26 and verse 39, I think it is, we'll start. Matthew 26 and I'll start in verse 36. They were in Gethsemane. And he said to them, "You sit here, I'm going to go over there and pray." And he took with him Peter and John and the others, a few others. And he said to them in verse 38, "My life is exceeding sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch with me." In a sense, he was kind of pleading with them, "Don't leave, stay here and help me in this." He went a little farther, fell on his face and prayed, saying, he knew that it was his job to give his life so that all other people that would listen and be obedient and live by God's ways and repent of their sins would have a life that would last forever, of intelligence, wealth, sincerity, all kinds of things that they never did have in this life in the same way. So he said to God the Father, "If it's possible, let this pass from me. But If that's not your will, then I'll do it your way. I don't know how long he prayed here doing that. It seems to say he had prayed for an hour over that. Verse 40, he came to the disciples, and he found them asleep. Something that important, and they just went to sleep. They didn't stick it out with him. They went to sleep. Now, there's nothing wrong in sleeping, but if they thought he was the Messiah and they fully grasped that he was going to give his life, you would think they might stay awake and talk about it. If not to him, then at least to each other. He said to them when he saw them, he said to Peter, "What? Couldn't you watch for just an hour with me? Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit is willing," and we all say we will, "but the flesh has a little problem at times." So he went off a second time and prayed, saying, "If this cup cannot pass away, unless I drink it," in other words, "if this is the only way, I'll do it your way." And then he went back, and it says another place, another hour. He came back and found them playing checkers. Nope. Sleeping. Their eyes were heavy. So he just left them and went away and prayed the third time. And he came back and he said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting?" And that's really destructive when you know you fell asleep and you caused difficulties because you fell asleep. And what can you say? What can you say? They couldn't say anything. "Are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is being betrayed. Get up. Let's go." Or as they said when the plane flew into Pennsylvania and finally went face down and killed all in there, one of the men there said, "Let's roll." He was going to take over and stop the death. Well, he didn't stop the death, but his statement was, "Let's roll." And that's what Jesus said, "Let's roll." He said, "It's time." And he still didn't become impatient. He just was telling them, "Look, this is happening. We need to be at it." Being patient while the others grow and become proficient. The next one, and it'll be the last one, is be dependable, but not independent. Not independent. We should represent God and the church, not ourselves. "Listen to me, I'll tell you. Don't mess with me." No, teach what God says in His Word. And we represent Him, and we're just explaining what God said should be done. So let's go to 1 Timothy 3, verse 15 again. The scarred old veteran talking to the young, in a sense, innocent Timothy. He'd been around, but he hadn't been around the block as long as some of the others had. So in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 15, well, 14 said, I wrote these things to you because I hoped to come to you shortly. And then he said, but if I'm delayed, I write so that you may know how you ought to conduct yourself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God. In other words, mentoring, we realize we ourselves, the mentor, if indeed we are the mentor, we're in the house of God. We're representing God. We're representing the laws that He directed us to follow and teach. And it's not just about us. It is about being in the family of God. Then let's go to 2 Timothy 2, verse 2 for one other. 2 Timothy 2, verse 2. About being dependable, not independent. we read over this and we don't see what he's really saying. The things that you have heard from me, Paul said to Timothy. So he had told Timothy a lot. Among many witnesses, you've heard it from me, about me, and you've heard it among many witnesses. Commit these to faithful men, faithful people, who will be able to teach others, not go off on their own and do their own thing, and be an independent. Paul was teaching him to be dependable, but not independent. He represented God. In other words, he was saying, what you hear, pass along to others, to faithful men who will pass it along, who will pass it along, who will pass it along. That's hard to accomplish, it seems like, in the church of God. It seems like there's always someone who will break away to have his own little group. But if everybody would do that, it would make mentoring lots easier if they passed it along and it was passed along. Then there's one final thing that Paul told Timothy, and it was mentioned today. And this is in the book of Titus this time, chapter 2 and verse 1. Titus 2 and verse 1 says, chapter 2, yes. But as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine. If you're mentoring someone and you're teaching things that aren't sound and are possibilities and always bringing up possible things, ideas that turn out to not be true. Sound doctrine. Quite often people want to have exciting doctrines that may or may not be true. Then they feel better. But just speaking the same thing about sound doctrine, that's important. First and foremost, as a mentor, we have to teach the truth of these principles. Sound doctrine, it makes mentoring much easier. In verse 2, he said, and then he begins to give principles to Titus that are sound principles about Christian living. He said in verse 2 that the older men be sober. Now, he was younger than the ones he was talking to, and he said, teach them how to be sober. Now, sober doesn't mean he gets drunk often, but he always gets sober after that. It means a sober individual about things that are realistic, reality, sober, sincere, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, love, in patience. That was how he was teaching, or you might say mentoring. Should an old man be mentored? Well, it seems like it here that Paul was telling this young man, maybe you need to mentor these old men. They don't seem to get it, or they need encouragement in it. Then in verse 3, he said, the older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. So again, he was teaching the young man how to mentor the older women on certain things of Christianity. Then he gets down, he said, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands and love their children. And then he lists a few things about the younger women that seem to be without God's guidance, without God's spirit, without confidence in God's ways. Sometimes gets to the point that it's a distraction of the young woman rather than the beauty of the young woman. It's said to be discreet, chaste. Now, I didn't mean chaste after. Chaste, that is, sexually pure or not sexually getting the attention of people. I don't want to hurt anybody by these things, but this is what Paul said. Timothy, Titus, should encourage the younger ladies to do, because once they get through all of this and look back, and if they haven't ruined their life or hurt their life or hurt their reputation, they'll be so happy and life will be so good when they see the goodness of life from God's perspective. A good homemaker, obedient, and so that the word of God wouldn't be blasphemed. Then, not to exclude the little young men, he said, likewise, exhort the young men to be sober-minded. In all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works. So he was mentoring Titus as to how Titus should mentor the young, the old men, the older ladies, the young boys, on how to live their life so as to have a good life at something, a good life that they would not have to regret later on that had ruined their life. But sometimes in trying to be a mentor, you just let it ride and nothing ever gets done. He was showing him that it was his responsibility as the minister, but it is also the responsibility of parents to mentor their family. But sometimes that doesn't work because the parents don't know how to go about it. I was watching a movie recently about Brian Bosworth. He was an Oklahoma Sooners football player, and he was outstanding. But there was an anger in him that he couldn't control because his father always put him down, and he could never ever please his father. So when he went to Oklahoma City, to the Oklahoma Sooners, the coach built him up so great as to what a great player he was, and he was an outstanding player. And he did what the coach told him to do, and then he became famous. And it went to his head, and it ruined his life. So the father could have solved a lot of this if he had understood how to mentor his son, but he didn't. Because, in truth, the father wanted the glory of the son, and he didn't get that either. But it just shows that the family should be able to mentor the family. The church should be able to mentor if they find God's ways, if they understand the truth of God's ways, as Titus was told here. This is what you need to do. This is what you need to say. Do it this way and you'll have good success. In verse 7, he finished it in saying to Titus, in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works. Doctrine, integrity, reverence, incorruptibility. And then he said to Titus, sound speech. There again, that soundness. You can't mentor someone if you're not all that sound yourself. Sound speech that cannot be condemned. That one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say about you. Hey, well, I don't believe you, but that's all. Toastmasters International gives a very good template or cookie cutter, you might say, that can be lifted out and used by anyone in any area, job, even in the Church of God. Toastmasters International, and it's a good one. Dilly went to that for several years, and she learned a great amount of goodness about it, and she really enjoyed being there and still profits from having been there. Toastmasters International gives a succinct summary of the qualities needed in a good mentor. It says that in order to be a good mentor, one should be, and here's a list of Toastmasters International things. One, you must be available. No, don't bother me. I don't have time for you. Patient. Respectful. Flexible. Supportive of the group. In our case, the church. Knowledgeable. Confident. A good listener. I'm quiet, but I'm not always a good listener. And I've had to learn on that one. You think you are listening, but you're not. And then the last one of Toastmasters International, concerned about others. They have a good list of things that would help in mentoring other people and helping to develop people. So let's come to a conclusion on this, because I can feel you're getting a little itchy here. You know, when is he going to quit? In every arena, whether it's sports, entertainment, business, the family, or the Church of God, there comes a day when veterans have to hang it up. Some don't know when they've become a veteran, and some don't know when they've come to the point they ought to hang it up. We all have felt it. Herbert Armstrong didn't know when to hang it up. Many in the ministry have not known when to hang it up. There comes a day when a veteran has to hang it up. If not, he'll make a fool of himself. They'll have to relinquish their role to another person, possibly a rookie or even a novice. Before that day comes, though, a wise manager begins to train others to fill the spot before it becomes vacant. And that's what the Church of God is trying to do now. To fill spots before they become vacant. Victor's done a pretty good job of that. Considering what he had to deal with, that is not to say that God wasn't in the picture, but God does work in his church through physical human beings. I've mentioned this before, but it's a good example. And it shows the fact that the old veterans don't know when to hang it up. You may or may not remember Casey Stengel, the leader of the New York Yankees for many years. In 1951, the great, mighty Yankee clipper Joe DiMaggio had been at the grind of Major League Baseball for 15 years. He was it. He was the one. You didn't cross Joe DiMaggio. He was getting old and worn out, though, by the age of 36. 36, he was worn out. He needed to be replaced. Well, Stengel saw that. So first of all, he found Mickey Mantle in Oklahoma or Texas. A 19-year-old rookie phenomenon. He had muscle you wouldn't believe. He had speed you couldn't believe. He was great. And he embarrassed Joe DiMaggio when DiMaggio saw what he could do. So Stengel found Mickey Mantle, a 19-year-old phenom, and then Casey brought Mantle along till he was ready and able to take the place of the legendary Joe DiMaggio, and he did. Stengel was pretty smart. Well, the Church of God is no exception. Ministers and members are growing older, but they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it. Don't tell me I'm getting old. All right, don't, but get old anyway. Sooner or later, they need to be replaced in their jobs. In the ministry, in the work, in the world, sooner or later, the boss comes in and says, you know, you need to be replaced. We don't like to hear it, but sometimes we need to hear it. Jesus said that he would never leave us nor forsake us. But he didn't say we should work forever in the same boots, as some of us were told before we would die in our boots. So we should look to Jesus as the head of the church when it comes to making available recruits and believe in him who can become replacements in the structure of the church. And they're trying to do that. I think in the latest update, I think either there or the one before that, I heard it anyway, there are 7 others who are now in the gridiron, you might say, of getting ready to be involved in helping wherever they can in the ministry. When that happens, the job is a lot easier. If Christ doesn't step in and help out, then we do the best we can. And do the best that we can and wait for him to do what he will do. Mentoring can be an answer in part to the diminishing numbers, our leaders and manpower. You know, we no longer have the feeder system that we used to have, that of sports, like sports teams have. They have, well, even in football, they may have three or four quarterbacks in the background waiting. If one gets hurt, they have a lot of other things, and they get help that way. So we don't have that feeder system. We don't have a farm club that we once had. We have what we have, and it's very sparse. So by mentoring others, we're helping someone else in the oncoming generation to become a servant in the house of God. As I said, you can't teach anybody anything and make it work. It may take time, and we do need to look at the examples in the Bible where Paul didn't make certain things. He found them, and Jesus found, that is, but he knew of them. He found the apostles, and Jesus doesn't make us do anything. He lets us decide what we're going to do, and then he either helps us or let us find out the hard way. So I hope maybe this will help a little bit more in what's going on in the Church of God, the mentoring process, the replacement process, the growing old process, and helping others to do whatever it is that they are able to do to help.